Police Academy is your source for the no apologies, no spin truth about all things police. Discussions about why cops do what they do, avoiding speeding tickets, or just how to stay alive can all be found right here. No questions out of bounds, no topic too sensitive. This is Police Academy. Do you understand
the words that are coming out of my mouth? What we're dealing with here, glittering air, is a complete lack of respect for the law.
And smoke in the reef.
Call the dust pop.
We live in a society of laws.
Dust pop?
Yeah.
No, it's not real.
This thing of weed.
Takes one shot a weekend of training to get that bag.
One of my highest priorities as Attorney General has been to ensure that every American enjoys police protection that is lawful, that is responsive, and transparent.
Now, many of you may not like what I have to say in this series on the Chicago Police Department, but I'm okay with that, because I don't like what I have to say either. Unfortunately, I have to say it because it's the truth as far as I can see at this point. Now, it's not the whole truth. It doesn't tell us exactly everything there is to know about the situation in Chicago, but it gives us a pretty good idea of some of the big issues that need to be addressed. And unfortunately, it may just be the tip of that proverbial iceberg. 162 pages of a government single-space typed report turned into about 12 single-spaced pages of an outline. Sounds kind of boring, to be honest, but I assure you it's not going to be anything of the sort. You may have already listened to the YouTube video highlight of this, but there's a lot more going on than I was able to cram into that 10 minutes. So here's the nitty-gritty, the details, the examples, the stories from this Department of Justice report. Hate me if you want to, I'm just the messenger. Enjoy the show. I think I should start by explaining why I decided to look at this report. It's not like I said, oh, 162 pages, that sounds like fun. Now, there are lots of other departments who have been investigated and are now under consent decrees with the Department of Justice. Chicago's not the only one. I'm not picking on them. But there are a few reasons why I decided to look at this report. Number one, when Laquan McDonald, when that incident broke, it was an eye-opener for me to the fact that there are some issues going on with Chicago PD. The Laquan McDonald incident looked and smelled like a cover-up to me and to most people, honestly, looking at that situation. You have a young man who shot 16 times by one officer, although there were many others there at the time. Several of those shots were delivered as he was laying on the ground into his back. He wasn't really that close to the officer. He wasn't even moving at the officer. He did have a knife, but when the shots were fired, it was, let's say, more than questionable as to whether that use of force was justified. Now, they had the video, but didn't release it until a year after the incident. And almost immediately upon the video's release, the officer who shot Laquan McDonald was charged. Now, this incident is what initially garnered the attention of the Department of Justice. It is what started this whole thing. But it's also the first time I really started paying attention to Chicago police. And I've also heard more times than I'd like to admit from people who have heard the stories or who have lived in Chicago themselves, the issues that Chicago PD supposedly has. So when this report came out, I saw this as an opportunity to really get a good idea of what the heck is going on in Chicago. And by no means do I want anyone to think that this is the entire story. It's not at all. And I would love to speak with Chicago officers who can talk about some of this stuff. And if you're listening and you're one of those, or if you know one, feel free to contact me. I'd love to have that conversation. Not necessarily on the air. I know many Would not be comfortable with that, but I'd still love to have the convo. I am in the process of developing a platform, in fact, that will allow officers to anonymously record their own thoughts, and those would be publicly posted on a website through social media and podcasting as well. I'm working on that right now. I think it'll be really cool when it's done, but until then, I personally would love to talk to a Chicago officer to hear that side of the story. Now, the other reason I wanted to look at this is because I saw all these media headlines, you know, Department of Justice releases scathing review of Chicago police. I wanted to see for myself what all this hype was about. The Department of Justice, let's just say it's not exactly apolitical. It is part of a political system and certainly has those pressures. And this particular investigation was completed by the Obama administration's DOJ and Loretta Lynch. Now, I'm not saying that they can't be believed because they have a political view. I just wanted to see if those views could be seen in any bias in this report. I'm being upfront about that. And I'll also be upfront about the fact that it seemed pretty credible. I didn't see a lot of overt bias as I read through this. Most of the time, they were pretty dead on and had examples to support what they were saying. Now, there were a few examples of, you know, things I ran across where I had to stop and kind of tilt my head to the side and reread it. And I don't think that they were seeing some of these things real clearly. For example, there was one incident where an officer reported that they used a taser against someone suspected of some minor property crime as the suspect was running away. And they said, quote, "We determined that force to be unreasonable because, as described below, that level of force is unconstitutional on its face," end quote. Now, I'm not sure what they're looking at here and calling this unconstitutional on its face. Using a taser against someone for committing a crime and fleeing the police is not unconstitutional on its face. That is an overtly false statement. Another example said, quote, "In another incident, officers used pain compliance techniques and forcibly brought to the ground a man because he stiffened and locked his arms while they were arresting him," end quote. I'm stopping it there because they go on, but I want to point something out. They were arresting him. He was resisting, and they used pain compliance and took him to the ground. That is standard police procedure. There is nothing unreasonable on its face about that. And they go on in this sense to say, quote, "Arresting him for walking his dog without a leash and refusing to present identification," end quote. So if their issue is why they were arresting him, that maybe the arrest wasn't justified, that's one thing. But they're talking about levels of force. And if an officer is arresting you and you resist, they will use pain compliance and take you to the ground. And they should. That is how it works. That is how officers stay alive. You cannot wait for someone to mount a full-on retaliation or attack as you go to take them into custody. Everything else was pretty much dead on. Those are the two main examples where I really said, nah, you guys are wrong on this one. Now, does that kind of show their hand that there is bias there? I don't know. I mean, everyone's biased in one way or another. But again, as I read this entire report, they're providing examples, and we'll get to those as to, you know, what they're saying Chicago has wrong. And it makes sense. What they're saying makes sense. I didn't see them saying anything that wasn't supported by some sort of example or explanation. So I just wanted to kind of get that out of the way. I want you guys to know why I'm doing this content. I'm really looking for the truth about what's going on in Chicago, because I've been seeing stuff coming out of that city with the police department, and all of it's been bad. So I wanted to see for myself, you know, what the issues are and were and have been for quite some time, it seems. The other thing I want to share with you guys right up front is how this has affected me after reading this report. Well, first of all, I was shocked that it's this bad at Chicago PD. I figured there'd be some issues. You got a big department like this, crime-ridden city, all kinds of issues going on. I figured there'd be some problems, but I cannot believe that a modern police department was allowed to get to the level of issues that Chicago Police Department has been allowed to. I was shocked. This report also opened my eyes to the fact that police departments like this still exist. And the fears that some people have of the police based on a report like this, if you live in an area with a department like this, seem to be pretty justified. Now, the reality of it is if you aren't doing anything wrong and are cooperating with the police, you're going to be just fine, even in Chicago for the most part. But when you have an inherent distrust for the police, that situation is unlikely. Now, that doesn't excuse criminality. It doesn't excuse uncooperation with the police at all. I'm just saying it has helped me see that perspective. And in the end, I'm just mad, to be honest. I'm frustrated that this still happens, that a department could have these kinds of issues at this level. That's where I'm at right now. I don't understand it, but I also want to caution anyone listening that it is not as simple as, oh, Chicago Police Department's corrupt. It is not that simple. You want to point the finger at somebody, point the finger at the city of Chicago. We can point lots of fingers at lots of different places, and we're going to talk about most of those places, but it is not a simple issue. The three themes that are present throughout every part of this report, whether you're looking at Chicago Police's Academy, their FTO program, their accountability system, their supervision, whatever it is, these three themes were present: understaffed, underfunded, and unaccountable. Now, that is a bad thing when you're talking about a police department. And I've broken these podcasts, the series, down into three categories. We're going to talk about training first, then the accountability system, and lastly, the results. What these issues have created in Chicago. So three themes: understaffed, underfunded, unaccountable, broken down into three categories that are just helping me organize the content into talking about their training system, their accountability system, and the results of this mess. So this episode, we're going to talk about training, and that starts with the Academy. The Chicago Police Department's Academy. Well, first of all, like I said, understaffed, underfunded, and unaccountable. They have no idea if their training is actually working. They have no way to tell, no system in place, which is convenient because, according to the report, the trainers aren't very good trainers. They are using outdated methods like PowerPoints, which you cannot teach someone to be a cop via PowerPoint and sitting in a classroom. They, for example, were running a scenario where these recruits were sent to respond to a building, handle a call inside the building, and all the trainers, the people who should be watching and critiquing and guiding these new recruits who are learning how to do their job, were inside the building acting as actors. So they didn't see when these recruits pulled up right in front of the building, which is Officer Safety 101. You don't do that. And speaking of 101 classes, let's move to Use of Force 101. Quote, as just one example, a class we observed on deadly force involved officers viewing a video made roughly 35 years ago prior to key Supreme Court decisions that altered the standards used to evaluate the reasonableness of use of force. The tactics depicted in the video were clearly out of date with commonly accepted police standards of today. Following the video, the instructor spoke for approximately 30 minutes, but did not give detailed information on justified versus unjustified use of deadly force or the standard of objective reasonableness, all essential topics for deadly force training. The training itself was inconsistent with CPD's force policies, further undermining its utility in teaching recruits their obligations under department policy and constitutional law. Several recruits were not paying attention, one appeared to be sleeping, and there was a minimal attempt made to engage the students in the lesson. In fact, the instructor arrived to the class 10 minutes late and dismissed students 20 minutes early from this critical class on how CPD officers should use deadly force. The impact of this poor training was apparent. End quote. And we'll see the impact of that later on. 35-year-old video. That's before two of the most important Supreme Court cases regarding the use of deadly force, Tennessee versus Garner, which is the fleeing felon rule, and Graham versus Connor, that says that officers have to be objectively reasonable in their use of deadly force. I don't know how you can be a police officer and not understand those fundamental principles, but they asked several officers to articulate when the use of deadly force would be justified in the field, and they said, quote, only one out of six came close to properly articulating the legal standard for use of force, end quote. That's why you've got to be able to evaluate your training, because clearly the training isn't working. On top of this, anyone that gets into the academy is pretty much going to pass. And they were asking people that are part of the academy, the trainers and administrators, you know, what's the attrition rate? How many people do you lose in each academy class? And they didn't really have solid numbers, but their answer was, pretty much zero. Pretty much everyone makes it through. Now that, we'll see this again, that is a red flag. If everyone makes it through your academy, either you've got the best hiring and recruitment system in the world, or you're doing something wrong. Not everyone's made out to be a cop. We're not all cut out for that kind of a job. And the academy is the first step in, well, hiring is the first step in weeding them out, but academy is a very important step. It's where you get to see the rubber meet the road just a little bit, and you can start to tell, yeah, this person's not cut out for this. If everyone's passing, you're allowing in some people that should not be cops, and that is a problem. So now the recruits have passed the academy, where they haven't even been taught some of the most basic fundamental principles of effective and constitutional policing, and they're put into the FTO program, Field Training Officer Program. Well, if there's no FTO available, that's also a problem. And Chicago has an issue there because they don't have enough trainers. And what they used to do, this, the report said they don't do this anymore, but they used to have this thing called Operation Impact Zone, where if a recruit came out of the academy, badge and a gun ready to go, and there's no trainer available, that recruit is sent to, or was sent to, a hot zone on foot. They were told, you are here to be officer presence only. Do not intervene. Do not take action. What a way to start your career. You're not properly trained in the first place, and then before you get what should be real training in the field with a competent officer showing you the ropes, they say, go walk this beat in one of the worst parts of the city by yourself. Good luck. That is horrendous. And I can't imagine what that, I would love to hear from an officer who went through that to see how that impacted them. That's absurd. Not only is that not caring about your officers, and I'm sure that they sense that, it's really not caring about your community at all, because it puts both sides in danger. Now, once a trainer becomes available, that trainer might have two or even three rookies to train at once. The report says that FTO trainers are seen as just a warm butt in a seat. All the department cares about is that there's a trainer with the rookie for a certain amount of time, and then, hey, everyone passes again. Remember that common theme, the three themes that I talked about? Understaffed, underpaid, unaccountable? Well, same thing here. Not enough to FTOs. There aren't good incentives to get good officers into the FTO program. In fact, the report said that officers are required to leave their assigned patrol areas when they become FTOs. And if you're a good officer and have been there for a while and know what you're doing and you've got a place you like, you might not want to give that up. And last but not least, FTOs are not evaluated for basically doing their job, training the new recruits effectively. So there again, you have that accountability theme in there as well. All three of them in the FTO program. Chicago is looking to hire 1,000 new officers to go through the academy and FTO program. That is not going to go well if they don't fix these programs before they do that. Now, once you get through the academy and get through FTO and you're out on your own, you're alone or you're partnered with somebody, but you are a bona fide police officer with Chicago Police, you would expect to get some more training. It might be the last saving grace for some of these guys who just didn't get quality training when they should have, the academy and FTO. But there is no in-service training at Chicago PD, at least no continuing ed requirement, no regular training. They qualify with their firearms, it's required by law, but, quote, once a CPD officer leaves the academy, he or she is not required to participate in any live, regular annual training for the remainder of his or her career, end quote. That is absurd. The training that these officers get, according to this report, is pretty much always in response to some sort of crisis. For example, when the Laquan McDonald incident happened, part of the issue there was that you've got a guy with a knife running around. He's acting erratic. He's not obeying commands. You've got to do something before he runs into an innocent civilian and kills him. Now, a taser is a really good option in that situation if you can get close enough to deploy it safely, but none of the officers on scene were taser trained. In fact, there were very few officers on the department that knew how to and had access to a taser. So in response to that situation, they rolled out a department-wide taser training program, which, as is par for the course, according to this report, was basically them watching a video. Well, that's not an effective way to train an officer how to correctly use a taser, and that was reflected in officers' opinions. Many officers still feel like they have no idea how to use a taser. The training program, the people that run it, well, there's not enough of them, understaffed. They're undertrained. The trainers themselves are undertrained. There's an issue. They're underfunded, of course. They have no way to tell if their training's working, so there's the accountability theme again. They've got limited space and just old facilities. Their main facility wasn't updated, hasn't been updated since it was built in 1976. So you have officers who are being provided training that is clearly not well done, and the facilities that they're being trained in don't have enough space and are falling apart. What message does that send to your officers? It tells them that they are not important, and that training doesn't matter. And the human tendency is to be comfortable with where you're at. Scenario-based training, especially when it comes to use of force training, is very uncomfortable. And most people want to avoid that, but you can't. You have to do that kind of training. And if the department doesn't take it seriously, then the officers aren't going to either. Here's an example of one of the facilities, their indoor range. Quote, firearm training is provided indoors in a building with ventilation so inadequate that it is unhealthy for participants, end quote. Another example they provided was about the scenario training buildings they use, which house the training and tactics unit. They said, quote, it's dangerous both because of the dilapidated, inadequate facility and the lack of adequate safety protocols. When we visited, this facility did not have locked main doors. The armory room, a former school office, was unlocked with loaded guns left in the open, unlocked cubbies in a room left unattended. Training guns and ammunition were stored close to guns loaded with live rounds. The close proximity of these materials without adequate controls or labels created a serious risk that the real guns would be mistaken for training ones, or that the guns and ammunition could go missing or be stolen. End quote. There was another example they mentioned about a building that was really close to a school that they actually did live fire in, and how that is not a safe situation. So the training not only communicates to the officers that, hey, we don't care about you or your health, but is not safe for the community either. What if some kid walks into that training building, into that armory room, and grabs a hold of one of those guns? That's probably an issue. Now, the result of this training program was stated, I think, pretty concisely in the report as, quote, officers are asked to perform a dangerous job with insufficient guidance as to whether their force practices are safe, effective, or legal, end quote. Now, I want to give some examples that they provide in this report, but I want to remind you, you can't point the finger at one thing. This is a great example. These officers who are going through the academy, FTO, and not getting any training once they're, you know, in uniform, working the road, these officers were civilians before they got that training. So if the training isn't there, how can they be expected to be good cops that are out there correctly enforcing the law and protecting people's constitutional rights? You can't, because they were never taught the right way to do it. So here you go. Here are some examples of the wrong way to do it. This first one is about boxing in pursuits, using your patrol vehicle to block in a suspect trying to escape. If you've seen the Paul O'Neill video on the YouTube channel, that is a perfect example. I don't know if they were trying to box this car in, but it sure looked like it. And when I watched that, I said, why on earth would you do that? And here's the answer, because they don't know any better. Quote, CPD officers used unmarked police cars to box in a car when driven by an armed robbery suspect. After forcing the suspect to stop, the officer in the front patrol car exited and placed himself between his car and the driver's side of the suspect's vehicle. I'm going to pause right there. That is a terrible place to be. You're chasing an armed robbery suspect, and you are out next to the driver's side of the suspect vehicle. That's a terrible position to put yourself into. Continuing, the suspect backed up, striking the rear police car. As this occurred, the front car officer moved in front of the suspect's car. The suspect then placed the car in drive, turned his wheels, and attempted to drive away. The officer from the front car fired a single shot into the driver's window, claiming he feared the suspect would run him over, end quote. Well, it's pretty reasonable to fear getting run over in a situation like that, but if you put yourself into the position to get run over in the first place, whose fault is that? The Paul O'Neill incident is a case in point of this issue. They turned down a street toward the pursuit, which was coming at them, jumped out of their patrol vehicle right in front of the fleeing vehicle, and then opened fire on it because, yeah, Paul O'Neill almost ran the one officer over. But the question is, was he even trying to? Now, it's his fault for running away. He put himself in a bad position, but the police should not be doing the same by putting themselves in bad positions and therefore feeling the need to use deadly force. That is the point here. And they saw this as an issue during this investigation. Another example deals with foot pursuits. And foot pursuits in the law enforcement community are very well known for, number one, being a huge liability for departments because people get hurt when they're chasing suspects, but also they are more likely than a lot of other incidents to end up in deadly force shootings. They talk in this report about partner splitting in foot pursuits, that these officers oftentimes are bakered, we call it, two officers in one car, someone takes off on foot. The passenger officer gets out and chases on foot while the driving officer stays in the patrol car and tries to cut the suspect off. Well, the reason that's an issue is because if you have one officer in a back alley with a suspect, you're more likely to end up having to use deadly force. If you have two, you're more likely to be able to handle that situation without resorting to that. And this is essentially the issue the DOJ takes with this practice. I think they are kind of blowing it out of proportion. For example, if your partner's fat and slow, you're going to be separated from him anyways. You might as well let him drive the patrol car and cut the suspect off. I mean, then you take, for example, that not all officers are bakered. Some officers are alone and have to get into foot pursuits or choose to get into foot pursuits by themselves in the first place. And in my opinion, we shouldn't be so restrictive that we're telling police officers that they can't chase people for committing a crime. If you have reasonable suspicion to stop someone, you can do a Terry stop and frisk, and they take off on you, you can chase them. And I don't think that we should be stopping the police from doing their job just because a bad thing could happen. If you choose to run from the police, you risk a situation where you might end up getting hurt, or you do something that causes them to believe you've got a gun, whatever it is, and you get yourself killed. Don't run from the police. But I think the second we start saying, oh, we're not going to chase people anymore because it could result in a bad thing happening, where does that slippery slope, in my opinion, end? We're already doing that with vehicle pursuits. And again, it's a safety issue. You kill innocent people in vehicle pursuits all the time, so I don't disagree with it fundamentally, but there comes a point when the bad guys start to go, the cops aren't going to do anything. They're not going to chase me. Well, that's not exactly what you want criminals in your city to think, that, hey, if I just make it hard enough to catch me, I can get away with whatever I want. I was recently talking to a buddy of mine. You guys have heard from him before, who works for Omaha Police, and you know, I know very well how restrictive their pursuit policy is. When I was on night shift, I would listen to their Southeast channel, which is adjacent to the city I worked in, which was to their south. The reason I did that is because oftentimes they would jump on the radio and say, hey, I just had a vehicle run from me, or I have a reckless, quote-unquote, vehicle going southbound this location. They would describe it, give a plate, whatever. And basically what they're saying is, hey, I am unofficially pursuing this vehicle until they bail or wreck. They couldn't pursue. They couldn't turn their lights on and call it a pursuit. Otherwise, they'd be in big trouble. But we could. And when those vehicles came into Bellevue, then we would initiate pursuits and catch the bad guy. And I don't know how many times I heard from bad guys, oh man, I'm in Bellevue. And that's because they knew they could get away with it in Omaha. And as we're talking about this, I told my friend, if I was going to go commit a robbery or really any serious crime, that's where I would do it. I'd go to Omaha, do my thing, get in a car, because that's all I have to do. All I have to do is get to a car, and I'm scot-free. That is not the message you want to send to your criminals. And you start saying, well, we shouldn't be pursuing, we shouldn't be doing foot pursuits, whatever. I agree you need to be smart about when you initiate a foot pursuit or vehicle pursuit. It needs to rise to the level of, hey, letting this person go, that risk outweighs the risk of, you know, the injuries or the bad things that could happen by chasing them. But police officers, just like our military personnel, have to be allowed and encouraged to do their jobs. And part of that is chasing bad guys. That's honestly why a lot of people sign up. Yes, it's dangerous. That's police work. We need to learn to accept that, in my opinion, my humble opinion. The last example they give is about something called a jump out. This is where, quote, the practice involves groups of officers frequently in plain clothes and riding in unmarked vehicles, driving rapidly toward a street corner or group of individuals and then jumping out and rapidly advancing, often with guns drawn. These actions often cause one or more members of the group to walk away briskly or run from the scene, end quote. Yeah, I'd probably walk away briskly or run too if I was in the hood and some cars came flying up and guys with guns jumped out and started advancing on me. Now, the report doesn't really specify, but I would assume they are identifying themselves as the police, so there's a factor that we're not really taking into account here, but it kind of is a bit of a dangerous practice and is definitely going to result in a lot of foot pursuits when that might not have been necessary. I mean, a lot of times the only difference between a foot pursuit and a casual conversation and peaceful arrest is, you know, the difference of doing a jump out or, you know, casually walking up. Hey guys, can I talk to you for a second? Then you work your way into the case. You get your evidence, make the arrest. Same result. You still arrested the bad guy, but without all the drama. Now, I want to be clear here. I'm no use of force expert. One doesn't need to be to see that some of these practices don't make any sense, but I'm just highlighting the examples and explanations this DOJ report gives as to the poor quality and lack of quantity of training that Chicago police officers are receiving. Now, the very last aspect of this is your supervisor. As an officer, your sergeant and lieutenant, you know, that command structure is not only there to provide you with resources, but to mentor you and guide you along in your career. They should be there supporting you and giving you what you need to do your job well. And that includes, you know, saying, hey, what you did here, that's not okay. That's not constitutional. That wasn't safe. I think you could have handled it better, etc. The supervisor's job, I don't care who you are, what department you work for, your job as a patrol supervisor is in part to make sure that your officers are performing their duties within policy and within the law. That is part of your job. I don't care if it's not written down anywhere. That is part of your job. You are responsible for that. The report said, quote, many supervisors we spoke with are committed to effective, safe, and constitutional policing within their districts. Yet systemic flaws in what CPD expects of them and the priorities that CPD sets prevent line supervisors from meeting those goals, end quote. For example, supervisors, when they approve use of force reports where an officer is explaining the level of force they used on a suspect and their justification for that, well, in this case, they don't actually provide any justification. It's basically a checkbox report with Chicago. And the supervisors simply make sure that it's correctly filled out, rubber stamp it, and send it on. There is no sort of accountability at that most crucial level. The report also mentions that supervisors are given all kinds of administrative work that really shouldn't be assigned to them in the first place. So instead of being out there in the field, they're called patrol sergeants for a reason. You're actually supposed to be out there monitoring your officers, making sure they're doing their jobs, and that you can help them and provide whatever support that they need. Well, if you're working on admin stuff that a civilian employee could do instead of a sworn officer, then you can't do that. So the department itself has misprioritized what their supervisors are supposed to be doing, and then they're not properly trained. They don't actually know what their primary role is. Check boxes and rubber stamps are not an effective way to have your patrol level officers doing an effective job. But that is what supervisors with Chicago do, and they're not really taught or trained otherwise. Not to mention the fact that they're understaffed and cover too many officers per sergeant. The industry standard is 7. If you are a supervisor, you should have 7 or so officers under your command. Well, during this investigation, they found that it is common to have a sergeant in charge of 12 cars, which could be up to 24 officers if they're all Baker units. There was one example where, quote, a single sergeant was responsible for an entire district during the day shift. The district included 25 officers on patrol, plus 14 officers stationed in 7 different high schools throughout the district. This left one sergeant in charge of nearly 40 officers spread out over a wide geographic area, end quote. Now, this example seems to me to be one where, I don't know, maybe someone called in sick and it fell to one sergeant to be responsible for all these officers. So this seems like a worst case scenario, but that's why you have minimum staffing policies. You should not have one sergeant in charge of 40 officers. Now, on top of that, they don't share the same schedule as the officers that they supervise. So a sergeant comes in one day and is in charge of a certain crew who always works together. The officers share the same schedule, but then the next time the sergeant comes in, it's a different crew. Well, how can you build relationships and be able to mentor people that may not trust you because you're not their sergeant? You can't take ownership of a crew, or it's not as easy to do so when you're not always supervising the same crew. That doesn't make any sense why you would rotate schedules like that to where officers and sergeants are on different schedules. It makes absolutely no sense. I hope by this point you're starting to get a feel for the catastrophe that is coming in this series. You have officers who have not been properly trained from the academy through FTO, through in-service training, and now we're seeing they're not being supervised either, and their supervisors aren't properly trained. So it begs the question, who is holding anyone accountable here? That first level of defense is the supervisor, and they're not doing it. So who is? Well, in the next episode, we're going to talk about the IPRA, Independent Police Review Authority, the Bureau of Internal Affairs, and the Police Board. Collectively, the quote-unquote accountability system at Chicago PD. Let's just say it's going to get interesting. That's it for this one, ladies and gents. Thank you so much for tuning in. I do want to reiterate, because I'm serious about this, if you are a Chicago police officer or you know someone who is or was, let me know. Write me an email, policeacademypodcast@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. Anytime someone contacts me, especially through email, it's always confidential, so no worries there. But I would love to hear from you. Write me an email, policeacademypodcast@gmail.com. And last but not least, I want to give a shout out to Jameson Marr for a lovely review on iTunes for the show titled Stuff Mass Media Doesn't Tell Us. Quote, valuable information that you rarely get the opportunity to come across anywhere else. Great content that I look forward to every week. Keep up the good work, Justin. So I don't know if that's Jameson or Justin, but either way, thanks for the review. I appreciate it very much. And if you haven't reviewed the show yet, that's totally okay. I forgive you. as long as you go do it right now. All right, guys, that's it for this one. I will see you next time. As always, do good, be strong, fear nothing. This is Police Academy.